brothers and sisters and comrades, I was interested to hear that little brief discussion about careers, about whether you should work in the, what you call them, the union bureaucracy, or whether you should work in the, I keep forgetting their name, the NGOs, thank you. So as by way of introduction, I was 25 years as a full-time paid revolutionary, and I think that's where we should try and work. And I got involved in politics in the uprising in Derry in 1969, which was inspired by the Black Revolt in America. And out of that, we built a revolutionary organization, which at its height brought down the Thatcher government because it was elected into the leadership of the poll tax movement in Britain. I would like to say that, in my opinion, the split in the AFL-CIO is, to all extents and purposes, a non-event. And the reason I say that is the split in the AFL in the 30s came about because of the threat of the three big strikes in 1934 in Minneapolis, Toledo, and San Francisco, which showed Lewis and the people around him that unless they organized the working class in America, the revolutionaries would organize the working class in America. So he split, took the money of his miners' union, and organized the CIO. This is in no way comparison to that. That split developed, the CIO developed, the AFL grew on the basis of an upward swing in the movement with revolutionary radicals organized all over the country. This split has developed on the basis of a collapse and membership of the union movement and a decline and a falling back and a defeat of the union movement. And so there, that's why I say it's a non-event. It's not going to lead to any steps forward, and in my opinion, it's not going to lead to any great steps back either. I think the reason that I also would say this is that I believe neither wing has any grasp whatsoever of the world in which we live in today. We live in a world of a massive capitalist offensive. Every area of our life is under attack. And the reason for that, there are a number of reasons for that, but one of the main reasons for that is that when Stalinism collapsed 15 years ago, that US and world capitalism suddenly saw Eastern Europe, Russia, and increasingly China now open to them for their capital and also the labor in those countries. And so they saw that all the defeats they'd suffered in the last century, they were going to throw them back, they were going to take everything back. Also, that gave them the boost to their thinking that they could also take all the gains that working class people made in America, Western Europe, Australia, and the countries that had remained in the capitalist world, they could take all those back also. Bush says that his job is to take back all the gains that were made in the 30s and all the gains that were made in the 60s. Now, he won't be able to do it, but that's what US capitalism is trying to do. Militarily also, what are they trying to do? They go into Iraq, Afghanistan, bases throughout Central Asia. They're trying to put a ring around China. They're on the offensive economically, politically, militarily, and also ideologically. I'm sure a lot of people here work in the universities. You would know a lot better than me that in the universities, in the academic world also, is a huge offensive against any left ideas that exist, that still hang on. So I believe that unless you face up to this reality, and neither of the union wings face up to this reality, then you will continue to go down and decline, and the working class will go from one defeat to the other. We have to recognize this enormous offensive of capitalism. We have to also recognize that within that, US imperialism is trying to take over the world. They have an expression for it. Full spectrum domination. That's what they call it. Take over everything. Nobody will challenge them. And out there is a rising giant of Chinese capitalism, which they are looking at with extreme worry and trying to figure out how they're going to deal with this giant. Now, that's the world that we live in. Now, the labor bureaucracy in America Are they talking about this? Are they discussing this? Are they figuring out what it means that the cost of labour is $2 an hour in China and $65 an hour for the full package and the auto workers? We should talk this weekend about Delphi. What is Delphi seeing? And the CEO of Delphi, the guy that's brought in, interviewed in the Wall Street Journal. He said, Delphi is simply a flashpoint, a test case for all the economic and social trends that are on the collision course in our country and around the world. In other words, the gloves are coming off definitively. And here in the most privileged sector of the working class and the advanced capitalist countries as well. What is the Wall Street Journal? I quote the Wall Street Journal a lot because you have to know what your enemy is thinking. China today is the world's largest startup and the world's largest turnaround. In terms of comparable changes in U.S. history, it is undergoing simultaneously the raw capitalism of the robber barons of the late 1800s, the speculative financial mania of the 1920s, the rural to urban migration of the 1930s, the emergence, and I can go on and on. In other words, we live in a totally different world. The Financial Times, what does it say? It says we are now entering more decisively than ever before organized labour meeting organized capital. They're being very kind. It's organized unorganized labour meeting organized capital. That's what is going on. So that's why I think that this split has very little significance. Now, what do I think then we should do? I believe that we should understand what happened the last time the American workers' movement was turned around. 1934. That's the last time it was turned around. And how was it turned around? In 1929, there was the slump. There was a collapse in union membership from 4 million to 2.4 million. The strike movement died. I think only in 1933 there began to be a little trickle of new strikes, which were defeated. But during that period, 1929 to 1933, the left, the Communist Party, the Socialist Party, the Trotskyists, began to build direct action, fight to win movements. The unemployed movement, the housing action movement. And when somebody was evicted from their house, they put them back in their house. When somebody was thrown out of their job, they tried to put them back in their job. And on that basis, they built a network through direct action, mass fight-to-win struggles. They built a network of fighters throughout the United States. Many of them were in revolutionary organizations, some of them were not. By 1934, they had enough movement, they had enough forces brought together, and the mood had begun to change as the economy began to take off, that they won the major strike in Toledo through mass fighting on the street. That's the way it happened, not negotiation. Physical fighting on the streets. Occupations of the plants, Minneapolis, physical fighting in the street, physical defeat of the cops in Minneapolis and all the thugs that they brought in, and the same in San Francisco with the general strike and the physical conflict in there. And that resulted in the big forces of the bureaucracy having to act or they want to be replaced. In my opinion, that's the only way it's going to be turned around. It's not going to be turned around any other way. If anybody disagrees, I'm very willing to hear what they're saying, but it's not going to be turned around. It's not going to be turned around in the way they organize it the minute. Either wing, which is organizing for every strike, they organize it to make sure it's defeated. They are terrified that a strike will win. Because once a strike wins, other workers think, hey, you can win here. The union leaders are not right when they say, what can we do? So what we got to do, in my opinion, is fight for that idea and organize for that idea. The consciousness of the working class, in my opinion, in America, the consciousness is one where they believe that they can't do anything and they can't win. And if we're all activists in here, whoever's an activist, we have to try and change that consciousness. Now, I belong to a tiny little group called Labour's Mountain Voice. Its papers are out there on the table. And what we do in our activity is if there's a struggle, like there's a struggle in Lake County, Indiana now, where BP, US Steel, and a few other of the big oil companies, they bribe the politicians, They've reduced the by $170 million the taxes on their own, on themselves, and they put the taxes up on the homeowners by hundreds and hundreds of percent. There's a possibility that 200,000 people could lose their homes. So with our tiny forces, we go there, and what do? We go to the homes of the legislators who voted for it. We go to the homes of the people, the faces of capital that brought that through. We try and got the resources together to occupy BP's offices and so on. We have a few people together out in California. In Alameda County, 250 families were lost in their Section 8 grants. We helped them to organize, occupied the mayor's home, occupied the mayor's office, went to the mayor's home, went to the mayor's church, went to the gas station where he filled his tanks, and everywhere we went, what would we do? We were distributing information. And we were asking the working class people to boycott these people and stop what these people were doing. And we were helping the people organize. This is direct action, fight to win activities. The union leaders, neither wing will touch this with a barge pole. The overwhelming majority of the liberal wing of the union bureaucracy, neither. I have to say also that I would really like to say Jobs with Justice take up these actions. Whoever carries out these struggles against, or these actions against the working class has a face. They have a home. Most likely they have a church they go to. So let's go after them. Now, I'm not advocating violence after them, but advocating mobilizing the working class. And I'm also saying that we have to, at the same time as we do that, pull together networks and organize these people and discuss capitalism, socialism, the history of the U.S. Workers' movement. I'd like to finish up by saying a couple of details. I don't think that there's too long as far as the workers' movement is concerned, because I think we have things like global warming. We have things like the environmental destruction that's going on around us. Catastrophes lie in the not-too-distant future. And I think that's going to change consciousness. People are going to increasingly see that they have to do something. And that will be a plus for us, for activists who say you've got to act. But I also think that there's a possibility of real major forces coming onto the scene now that could help us a lot. In China, at the moment, there's the development of the biggest working class in history. Last Christmas, the Chinese New Year, the last one, not this one, the last one, 460 million Chinese workers went from the cities back home to the countryside to visit their family. Can you imagine that? 460 million people. Anyway, what kind of a economy has developed there that could even transport them? But this is a gigantic new working class. In China, in 2004, there were 74,000, what the cops there called, protests, riots, and demonstrations. That's quite a large development. But also, 28% up from the previous year. Business Week said that a new labor movement is developing in China, under the surface, quietly, but definitely. So I believe that there'll be new forces coming on, and I think also in the US there'll be new forces. So I would like to just throw out those few ideas. I think there is no way that this movement will be turned around unless we take direct action, unless we have a strategy to win, and unless we recognize that we have to challenge capitalism, that we have to challenge the union bureaucracy and build new networks such as were built in the 30s.